funding for public schools has made its way back into the spotlight in recent months after teacher strikes that called for funding increases in a number of states, and education spending is already shaping up to be a top issue in Wisconsin's race for governor.
Here in Wisconsin, people have long taken issue with the state's school funding formula. Our next guest took a closer look at how that formula impacts rural districts and how enrollment decline may be making their funding situation worse.
Sarah Kemp is a researcher with the School Enrollment Projections Program at the University of Wisconsin Applied Population Laboratory. You can find her recent piece about rural school funding online at wiscontext.org. Sarah, thanks for being with us.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
So you write that funding for public schools in Wisconsin has gotten more complicated over the years. In our state, where do schools get their funding from?
Schools get their funding primarily from two sources, general state aid and state and also local property taxes, as well as federal dollars in some incidences as well. But in terms of talking about the revenue and the revenue limits that this article focuses on, it's really that revenue comes from local property taxes and general state aid.
And how has that formula been tweaked over the years?
It has changed. The early mid 1990s was a time when there was a pretty significant change to funding, and it's sometimes referred to the three-legged stool. And so that was when schools were funded at two-thirds percent, or two-thirds of their funding came from state aid. And then there was two other legs of the stool, the qualified economic offering, which limited teacher compensation, and then revenue limits were put in place at that time. And so that was sort of the first time that a real significant change occurred in funding. And since that time, there's just been sort of little tweaks, minor things that have changed. But we've lost the two-thirds funding. We've lost the QEO. Both of those no longer exist. Mm-hmm. But the revenue limit formula is still in place.
So reading your article, it seems like schools in Wisconsin are divided into four categories. There's urban, there's suburban, there's town, and then there's rural. How do state funding formulas and caps on other types of revenue affect those different types of school districts differently?
Well, they affect them differently primarily as it relates to enrollment. So the formula is the same for everyone. But because the formula is very heavily dependent upon determining the number of students in a school district, that changes over time. And so so that's really the effect. And so because rural districts have been declining more significantly than any other of these local area or locales that we talk about, they've been affected more dramatically than the other three categories.
Is that because there is funding that is tied to just the number of students that are in a district?
Correct.
And it seems like there are, actually, I have to say, more school districts that count as rural in Wisconsin than I kind of expected. But looking at the map, I believe it's well over half.
Yes, that is very surprising. It was surprising to me when I started doing this research that it's 55% of all the districts. So we have 422 school districts in the state. And as we mentioned, you know, over half are rural. Yet the population of those 55% of districts is only just under 20%.
So a real difference in number of students and in these districts versus the part of the state that they're actually covering.
Correct.
So I want to talk about what things schools are paying for, because I think it would be easy to think, well, you know, you get X amount of dollars per student and, you know, that should work whether you're in a rural area or you're in Madison or Milwaukee. But there are certain things that schools pay for that don't scale up or down according to students. They're kind of set costs. What kind of things fall under that?
There are certain fixed set costs that any school must spend in order to run effectively, efficiently. Certain things like facilities and food service costs, There's still certain administrative costs that are the same no matter what size the district is.
We're talking with Sarah Kemp right now. She is with the Applied Population Laboratory at UW-Madison, and she's a researcher there. Her recent piece about rural school funding and enrollment decline is online at wiscontext.org. So, Sarah, there are some costs that, you know, no matter... it's going to cost to keep the lights on, whether there are 20 students in that classroom or that area or 50 students in an area, things like that. I would also assume that some things like transportation might even be higher in rural districts. So did that be true?
That was going to be the next item I was going to share with you. Transportation is definitely an issue, especially for rural schools that are much larger geographically. And so the cost of transportation is higher. And there has been some categorical aid that has been provided to rural districts to address that issue, but it still is a challenge for them to be able to cover that cost.
So there have been some attempts to address the specific concerns and challenges of rural school districts, like you were just saying, some aid for transportation. Have lawmakers tried to even the playing field in rural districts in other ways?
Again, there, as we mentioned at the beginning, there's been little tweaks here and there. It's been primarily in categorical aid.
And what does that mean, categorical
so,
aid?
So a particular aid is given to a particular area like transportation. So it's an example, a sparsity aid provides additional funds for transportation. So it specifically has to go to an
item.
So
it's designated.
Designated.
Funding.
Versus we talk about the general state aid. As it describes, it's general revenue, and so that is where there has been much discussion about modifying that, because there's just been little tweaks to it and not any really significant changes to that the funding formula. And so there's been several things that have happened over the last couple of years. The legislature just completed a blue ribbon commission moving across the state, talking to people in education about, you know, what are the issues regarding the state funding.
And what were they hearing? What kind of feedback did they get?
There was a lot of discussion about this issue that many rural schools are challenged by the lack of funding. I heard that in some of the testimonies that I looked at already. Haven't read through them all. I focus primarily on the rural part, so I can't address the other areas of the state as far as that commission goes.
One thing that I was interested to read in your article for WisContext was that there has been a decline overall of enrollment in public schools, but the rural school decline has been the most significant. I believe it's about 3.3%. What accounts for that much of a decline in the rural areas? Are there certain factors that we can point to?
So I did look at, a five-year window from 2012-13 to 2016-17. And as you mentioned, rural was really the most significant area that declined by this 3.3%. There are the primary factor is there are fewer births, there are fewer people in rural areas, fewer children. And so I think that's why districts have been seeing this decline, that there just isn't the growth like we've seen like in suburban districts around this state, where they've, you know, seen, we've actually seen an urban increase too in this window too. There was an increase of 1% in urban areas. So urban and suburban areas are growing, rural areas are not.
And I'm guessing that decline in rural population in general is also affecting the property tax base that those rural schools also rely on.
Very true.
Yes. And so does the state as a whole determine how much a school district can levy in property taxes to support itself?
That is up to the district. So districts can go to referendum to increase that levy. So what the funding formula provides, you know, X number of dollars for the district, and then the rural district has to decide, do they, you know, go to referendum? Do they find places to cut costs? Do they use their what we call the fund balance. So they have to find stopgap solutions to address it if they are seeing this decline in enrollment, less revenue. It's sort of this cycle that's happening. And so something has to give.
Well, and the term stopgap means it's really a temporary Band-Aid. As we wrap up, Sarah, what in doing this research did you find that rural school districts would benefit from long term to possibly at least slow this trend, if not fix it?
Well, I really believe that there's been a lot of discussion about modifying the funding formula, and I think the state may be poised to do that. Outside of that, it's just one step at a time, and dealing with the year to year decline. And outside of the items we just discussed, I think that really the time might be ripe for a change in the formula.
Well, Sarah, thanks so much for joining us
today. Thank you.
That was Sarah Kemp, a researcher with the School Enrollment Projections Program at the University of Wisconsin Applied Population Laboratory. You can find her recent piece about how enrollment decline is affecting rural school funding online at wiscontext.org.
Coming up, the CDC released a report which found that 2017 was the deadliest year on record when it came to opioid overdose deaths. We'll learn more about the report and how the state is working on treating opioid addiction. Stay with us here on Central Time.